James?
Catherine.
How many bikes do you have?
That's not a fair question. How many mannequins do you own?
You didn't answer the question.
All right. Well, if you answer how many mannequins you own, I'll start.
Okay,
I'll go first.
Start. Go.
Well, let me see. There's 1, 2, 3, 4. What are you laughing at?
Well, because I saw a lot of them.
Am
hanging.
I supposed to know how many bicycles I have off the top of my head?
Well, they're hanging up.
Yes. Well, some of them are hanging.
Right.
Well, I guess they're all hanging, but some of them are hanging from the ceiling and some of them are just on my rack because there are five. Well, do I have to count the ones that are unassembled or the ones that are on permanent loans to friends?
I would include everything.
Oh, my God. Come on. That's like seven then or eight. It's hard to... Well, once they're disassembled, I have a frame. I definitely have enough parts to reassemble it. If you're going to count parts, then there's no end.
Parts is parts.
I have five fully assembled bicycles in the house right now. I have one that has been is basically on permanent loan. I have another one that I could assemble. Let's say five.
Okay.
They are all valid, kind of. I could sell one. Do you want to buy one?
I just got rid of a bike.
Got a gravel bike I could sell you.
A gravel bike?
Yes. It's like a road bike, but with fatter tires. These kids these days. You know, when I was growing up, I had two bikes. I had a road bike and a mountain bike. And of course, back then, that's all there was. You had a road bike, you had a mountain bike, and you hybrid, which is kind of a weird thing.
Right.
But, which was good basically for nothing. You know, if I was on my road bike and I saw a dirt trail off to the side of the road, and I said, hey, I want to go riding on that. You know what I would do?
Slide.
I would ride my road bike on the dirt because it's a bicycle.
Okay.
And I'm not like a little fragile thing that needs a special bike for every possible different variation of surface. I was living in Minnesota at the time, and guess what? Half the roads were dirt roads and half the roads are paved roads. So if I wanted to stop my ride and not go riding anymore, I'd just have to go back home on the pavement.
Wow.
Or I could keep going on my tiny little skinny tires. And you know what? It rode just fine, as it had been doing for the past 100 years.
In Minnesota?
Yeah.
You know what they say about roads in Minnesota?
They're flat and straight?
No, I don't think it's about roads. I'm blowing it already. But they said there's two seasons in Minnesota, and it's winter and road construction.
That's very clever, but I didn't find that to be the
case. Okay, I don't really even know what they're talking about. But
it makes sense, though, because you can't really do road construction when everything is frozen.
Right.
Because the ground is too hard. But I found that there were two seasons. There was horrible winter and horrible summer.
I lived there briefly.
You expect the winters to be bad. They're bad. It's surprising how bad the summers were, though. It was super early in the 90s with ridiculous amounts of humidity. So it was just very unpleasant the entire year.
I don't like humidity or mosquitoes or like any bugs that fly around a lot.
I don't remember the mosquitoes being too bad. I mean, like Maine is much worse than mosquitoes.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Yeah, so was Wisconsin by our summer home.
Really?
And then in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
There was a lot of mosquito nests.
Well, in Chicago, they're probably flying around with shotguns.
I think they were. Or
pistols.
I think they were. It was really awful.
I remember driving, when we were leaving Maine, we were driving away from Maine, and the mosquitoes were still like throwing themselves against my window.
And then your windshield is just like all messed up.
Well, no, they're like, I swear to God, if they'd hit a couple more times, they were going to crack the window and gotten through and gotten to me. They were very violent.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know.
I'm glad you're out of there.
We just went there for a few days for vacation. I mean, they just laughed at Deep Woods Off. They laughed at it. It's like it's like an appetizer for them.
Right.
They hear the spray. It's like, oh, there's a human. Let's go get him. You know what Deep Woods Off is?
A bug spray you spray in your skin?
Yeah, but Deep Woods Off is like the super stuff.
Okay.
Laced with even more chemicals.
Does it cause cancer in humans?
Well, I hope so. Oh, I mean, otherwise it's not working.
It just sounds horrible. I never like putting that stuff on. But I liked one bug when I was growing
up. You know, the funniest thing was I had to go buy some for my son because he's out camping right now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. I went to Target.
Uh-huh.
And I looked all over the place. I looked in the health and beauty, not the health and beauty. I looked in first aid, the first aid area. It wasn't there. So I finally asked someone, and she said, oh, it's probably in the seasonal. I was like, is it seasonal? What are you talking about? This is something you should carry all the time. But sure enough, she was right. It was over. They had a whole huge section of it, but it was in the, quote, the seasonal area, which seemed weird to me.
So now you have to hoard to have it on an off season.
Well, this is even less interesting than what I just said, but they had... They had a two-pack. They sold them in two-packs and single-packs. It's not really a pack, I guess, if it's single. But anyway, my point being, the single was $5.99. The two-pack was $11.99.
That's not a good value.
It's cheaper to buy them singularly.
Right.
I was looking at them, and I was trying to think, I only need one. I'm only going to buy one, but I kind of want to buy two separately. just to mess with them.
Well, it's the Costco mentality. We just want to load up.
Well, the thing is, I don't know if this is still the case, but a few years ago there was a study done that showed that the family size cereals were actually a worse deal than the smaller size cereals.
Right.
Per ounce, you were paying more for the big one because people assume that you're getting a better deal. And when you assume, that's when the capitalists swing in and really, anytime they can mess with you, they mess with you.
They do mess with you. But let's get back to the bikes.
Okay. Yeah. What more do you want to know?
What started your fetish?
Oh, it's not.
It's not a fetish. Well, I'm sorry. That's disparaging.
No, it probably is. It is a little bit of a fetish because there are two parts to it. I like riding a bicycle.
Uh-huh.
But then when I'm not on the bicycle, that's actually the more dangerous for my wallet because when I'm not on the bicycle, I'm thinking about how I'm going to upgrade or the next bike I'm going to buy. Of course, I haven't bought a bike in, 9 years now?
So
I'm not very good at buying bicycles. Uh-huh. I'm good at thinking about buying bicycles, though. I don't know what started it. I remember I was in high school and my old Raleigh got stolen.
Okay.
And then I went to the bike shop to see how I could replace it. And I saw this magical thing called a mountain bike. And this is like 88 or 89. So these mountain bikes were brand new at that point. I was like, oh my God, I fell in love with it. You know, it was a very masculine thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was new and shiny and big fat tires. Well, at the time, what seemed like big fat tires.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of kicked me off. Got me kicked off. I got sucked in at a young age for all the sexy reasons you expect to get sucked into any given consumer trend.
Right.
And then I enjoy riding. For some reason, you know, I think it's kind of weird when you get to sports and athletics.
Right.
Some people run. Some people do all kinds of different things. Some people ride.
Some people knit.
Is that a competitive sport?
Yeah. In my world. Go ahead.
Okay. I ride because I can tolerate the pain that is associated with it. And I think that's true of the people who are in any given sport. You find the sport that you can tolerate the pain associated with it. Because all sports are pain in the ass. Like literally, well, not necessarily the ass, but they're pains in different ways. I mean, literally they give you pain. People run or they ride and they acclimated to the pain, they can deal with it. I can, you know, ride up a mountain and be okay with that kind of pain.
Oh my gosh, no way.
Because it is painful.
It is painful. The last time I was on a bike, I was at a spa, like Red Mountain Ranch, I don't know, somewhere in St. George, Utah. And my friend that I was with, she's like, we're going on a bike ride. And I had no intention of doing anything at this spa
other than
getting like massages and facials and like reading and eating vegetarian food and like just literally going to yoga. I didn't want to do a thing that had anything to do with any physical activity other than doing like a downward facing dog periodically. And so she schedules this bike ride. And I hadn't been on a bike in years, but you never forget some like riding. And this freaking bike ride, they're just like hardcore in it. And I am not in shape and I'm not like into riding. And I had an asthma attack halfway. I couldn't even get to we had to go to the coffee shop. I guess we were supposed to go to the coffee shop and have like coffee and like crumpets or some shit. And I was wheezing to the backbone by the time we got there. I thought, now we got to turn around and go back. And it was the most horrific. And I have not been on a bike since.
So what is this? What kind of bicycle were you on? It was mountain biking?
It was just a bike.
So it was just a regular bike.
I don't know what it was. It was hard to pedal. And I just felt overexerted and out of shape and very sad. And I just was like completely embroiled in my own internal process and misery. I couldn't even see and it was a pretty scenery. I mean, it's a gorgeous, you know, St. George, Utah, that area around there. I think it's kind of beautiful.
I think that's the really important point though, is that if you're going to be on an enjoyable bike ride, you have to go at your own pace.
Yeah.
And
no,
they didn't sound like they were giving you the
chance. No, they weren't. And I was just trying to keep up and I just felt so like deficient. And I'm like, I didn't come here for this.
That's a big part of the cycling community or mindset is to make other people look weak.
Oh, they succeeded.
That's quote, oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble now. That's kind of the roadie mentality. There are quote roadies and mountain bikers. Those are two different types of aliens. I mean, people.
Okay. What's a roadie?
People who ride road bikes, but they're about 1,000% more uptight than a mountain biker. Mountain bikers are much more laid back and friendly, generally speaking. Of course, you can run into bad ones. I'm actually not a very good cyclist because I do both, but I have more of a mountain bike mentality.
Uh-huh.
So I wave at everyone that I see on a bike, and the roadies generally don't wave back.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to just like tool around and look at stuff and look at flowers and talk about it. I mean, I didn't think it would be this hardcore like bust a gut. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of co-opting the bike.
No. This is your experience.
I found it to be, and I said, I cannot do anything. I'm like, if you think I'm going hiking tomorrow, you're on friggin' crack. It's like, I'm going to have like organic tea and I'm going to sit home and I'm going to read And she did all kinds of stuff. And I just sat in the spa.
That's what you do at a spa.
Yeah,
right?
I could, you know. But they had like all these activities.
It's really important, though, to enjoy the type of cycling you're going to do.
Yes.
Identify what you'll be doing and just enjoy it. Because there are lots of different kinds of riding. I tell you, one of the things that gave me the most pleasure in my cycling career, I used to be a bike mechanic.
Okay.
And this is when I was in college. Actually, when I was in graduate school in North Carolina. I had a young woman come in, and she brought this old beat-up cruiser. She says, look, and she was almost apologetic about it. Okay, I know this isn't like the kind of bikes you're used to working with. No, bring it in. We'll take care of you. She's like, yeah, it's my dad's bike, and I just want to be able to get riding again. I just want to tool around town. I was like, that's totally cool. I took a look at it. You know, it's a pretty simple bike, so all she needed was like a new tube and a new tire. I was like,
okay,
no worries. You know, we'll get this done. Your bike is just as important as everyone else's bike. I treated her like I treated everyone else.
Right.
Very, what's the word?
Professionally.
Well, professionally, but...
courteously.
Even, like, everyone's evenly. Equal.
Okay.
Whatever that word is. There's a word for that. That's not the word.
Forget it.
Equestrian. I treated everyone like an equestrian.
That's perfect. Okay. Yeah.
We'll go with that.
Oh, we'll go with that.
It turns out, this is one of my wife's friends from veterinary school.
Oh.
And she was coming in to check me out. This was before we were married.
Oh.
So Jenny came in to check me out, and apparently I passed. And I was, like, so pleased by that.
That is kind of cute.
Oh, God, no. I don't like that story now. I don't want to be cute. I want
to
be hard.
No, I mean, it's just like because they cared enough to like about their friend and they want to see the guy. And I think that's heartwarming. That's okay. A nice little story.
Well, like I said, I was just pleased that I passed her test.
I'm pleased.
Okay.
So did you fix the bike?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, all bikes are beautiful.
I think bikes are beautiful. I remember my first bike.
How old were you when you had your first bike?
I was just little. The first bike I had was obviously like a, you know, those three wheel. What was it? Tricycle. It was blue. I was little. And that I was like kind of oddly attached to it. When my grandmother sold the house in Chicago, they were just getting rid of everything. And I saw that little tricycle. And it's weird, like the attachments you have. And there was no way I could like bring it to Phoenix. I was like so old. I mean, you know, you're not going to like ride a tricycle for a child. So I think that. And then I had one with like kind of a banana seat and like the high handlebars.
Right.
And it had a basket.
Very 70s.
Yeah. It had a basket on it.
Of course, those have been completely fetishized now, but what are you going to do?
Yeah. And I remember like I was so sick that Christmas and my parents had it under the tree. And there's a picture of me on the bike with this little Raggedy Ann doll. I still have the doll in the basket. And then the next picture is me like completely crashed into the picture of the Christmas tree, like wiped out, you know, laying on the bike, like because I crashed.
Because you wiped out, yeah.
I wiped out, like just sitting.
Well, here's a tip. Don't ride in the house.
I know. It's funny though. I should find those. That was, and my eyes are all, you know, ooh, I look so sick, like a sick little kid. It was funny. But anyway, yeah, that was my first bike, the banana seat.
Do you have any idea how expensive bicycles are now?
I have no clue. And I was going to buy one. If I was still living in this neighborhood, I would get a bike. I would want a basket. And I'd want to be able to drive down to the market, you know,
ride down.
Public market.
Ride down, you SUV driver.
I have no idea. Are they expensive?
Well, this past year was bad because the pandemic, everybody decided they wanted bikes.
Okay.
But putting that aside,
right?
Just assuming that 2021, 2020, and 2021 didn't happen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, bikes are insanely expensive. When I was a mechanic in the late 90s,
right?
We had one, and this is back in Minnesota, we had one guy who was single.
Okay.
Was a computer programmer, drove a crummy little truck and had a crummy little apartment. All he cared about was programming and mountain biking. So he had a lot of money. So every year, he would build the craziest, sickest custom bike he could make, bike.
That sounds cool, though.
It was awesome, especially as a shop guy. We don't usually get to see the really crazy,
right?
Expensive stuff.
My point being is
that we buy everything separately. Okay. And we assemble it. Literally, we build the wheels, we build the shocks, we build everything. So it's all custom. $5,000.
$5,000?
$5,000 for the craziest top-of-the-line stuff
no.
you could possibly... Like, for instance, the rear derailleur, which is the part that shifts the gears in the back,
right.
back around.
Uh-huh.
That was all custom machined from a place in Colorado. I think it was Colorado.
Wait, $5,000 for a bike?
Yeah. But that was the craziest, most expensive... That was the most you could spend on a bike in the late 90s.
Okay.
Now you can go into a shop... And just buy something off the shelf for $11,000 or $12,000.
No.
Oh, yeah. Full carbon fiber, full suspension bikes. And you can go up to 14 if you want. And that's before you even get into anything custom.
That's insane
is what that is.
I'm in shock. I had an old bike. I'm trying to look through my phone to find the picture of this old bike that my ex like just dropped off. He's like, here, I think this is your bike.
Really? Okay.
And I gave it to my friend Steve, and he threw me $40. And it was old. It's like this. It was this old Schwinn. It was green. I can't find a picture
of it.
Most Schwinns are green?
Yeah. That was kind of their color.
And it was a girl one, like a girl bike?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We call those easy on frames because bikes aren't gendered.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. How dare you? How dare you gender a bicycle?
How dare I gender anything, even myself at this point? It's like I'm just horrible.
I'm a little bit weird. I read a website about bicycling news, which is, you know, new equipment and whatnot, mm-hmm. which is kind of a silly thing to mm-hmm. read, but okay. Like a year ago, they were talking about a new bicycle, and it came in, quote, a men's frame and a ladies' frame. And mm-hmm. I post in the comments, dude, this is 2020. Are we still gendering bikes? I mean, we call these a diamond frame and an easy on frame because they're not for ladies. They're for anyone who wants to be able to step through the frame easily, you know, a little bit easier access.
Why did they gender them back in the day?
Well, probably because women needed those easy on frames because they were wearing dresses so that, you know, you could actually wear the dress while cycling.
Really?
The dress, if you have the easy on frame or the, quote, the ladies frame is one where there are two tubes in the front that kind of go down, slope down instead of sloping across.
Mm-hmm.
And so that lets you get on it and ride it with a skirt.
I never wore.
Because a skirt can fall down in front of you and stay, you know, you can stay modest.
Modest. I don't think I ever in my entire life rode a bike in a skirt.
Well, that makes sense.
But I had the easy on situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought they were for girls. But I preferred the other one.
They're not just for girls. They're for anybody who wants to be able to get on easily into a bike. Now, they're not as structurally sound, obviously, but you're not going to be mountain biking on these things, so it's not a big deal.
Right.
Bicycles. Yeah, they're crazy expensive now.
I had no idea.
Hmm. Well, most people don't, and you shouldn't, but anyway.
Yeah,
all right, so I think we've totally exhausted bicycles, at least for now.
No, I think it's bad. I have no idea.
I want to get back to why you have so many mannequins.
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't know.
How many mannequins do you have?
Is that a fair question?
Oh, right. You're throwing that back at me now?
I really don't know.
Oh, see, that's scary.
Because I lost count.
I am scared that you are in my house right now. I have a woman in my house who owns so many mannequins, she doesn't know how many she has.
Well, I bought them at Gershel, which is just a fantastic store that's just all old retail items.
Oh, that's interesting.
And when I was doing that cuckoo, I had this idea. I thought I just want to paint a body. I didn't want to take the time, I guess, to do like a mold of someone's torso. And so I happened to go into Gershel's and I actually was looking for display items. And then when I was there, I'm like, oh my gosh, they have these like for $5. They've got this whole rack of used shirt forms, which were the original mannequins. I mean, I have other that are actual legit mannequins. And so I bought a couple.
So you're talking about you have these partial mannequins. And yes. You also have some full mannequins.
Yes.
Or
then
parts
I have
of
like
mannequins.
Like other like just torsos and I have like body parts.
Sure, of course. You just have body parts lying around. Of course, that's normal.
Right. So anyway, I bought these things and some of them had kind of like partial legs and some of them just partial had legs. Like the just to the like below the waist kind of thing. And I got them home and I hung them up and then I'm like, well, there's nowhere to hang them in the studio. So I went back to Gershel's and I bought a tea stand. Like it's like now I'm turning into a retail situation in my studio. So I've got this tea stand and I think I bought like 12 or 18 because I wasn't sure what I was going to do. And then I went back. They had a pregnant one. So I bought a pregnant one.
Oh, my God.
And I kept looking at them and I asked the guy, I'm like, where? He goes, I just got them. You know, something was going out of business and he never really said much. And so it was like, I cleaned up the mannequins. They were kind of gummy.
Don't ask where the mannequins came from.
I found out. But this is an interesting story. And it kind of like dovetailed. It's not a spiritual corner scenario, but it was an energetic situation. So I cleaned them up. And then I poured some stuff on them. I was working with another friend. She was doing a lot of pour painting. We didn't prep it. I'm like, we have to prep it. It's going to peel. It delaminated. I took the delaminated stuff and then I reattached it. And that was like some of the pieces.
God.
I mean, it was just, it's crazy. I have video of that process. But long story short, I just was.
So you took a video of your victims?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Okay.
Like me peeling the stuff. It was like peeling a really bad sunburn. Whew. So I started doing this. And as I was doing the mannequin, as I was deciding, I'd look at them. It's like, oh, I'm going to make this one like a ballerina. I'm going to make this one like a superhero. And they kind of started becoming characters. Mm-hmm. So then I kind of did a play on the Jungian archetypes. And I took the archetypes, the 12 archetypes, and like I converted it kind of to an feminine aesthetic. And I didn't get through the whole list. But like we had the jester. I had like the rebel. I, you know, whatever. The queen, which would have been the monarch. Or it was based on like Queen Elizabeth, this picture of Queen Elizabeth. And then I went back and I wanted like a hand. And so I went back to Gershel's and I said to the guy, so I'm working with these mannequins. I said, so unusual because all of a sudden they feel like they want to be a character. And this whole thing unraveled in my head and they're turning into characters. And he just kind of grinned. He said, you know where I got those mannequins from? I said, no, I asked you, where are they from? And he said, there was a costume shop that had gone out of business.
Oh,
I think it was Easley's Fun
yes,
Shop.
Yes, yes, that's it. Because I had John Fitzsimmons, a local magician on Heatstroke. We actually interviewed him on Heatstroke, and okay. He did a bunch of stuff with them. That's where he started actually getting in. When he was a kid, he got into magic stuff because he started going there.
Oh, wow.
And he did a couple of different Guinness Book of World Records with that costume shop. He did, I think, the most costume changes in an hour with those guys. So you probably were dealing with the same costumes and mannequins that John was.
Right. And these little forms. And that's why I'm kind of bummed that I can't find those other six pieces because they were from Easley's. Mm-hmm. And so I still have the one, like the better looking ones with the legs and stuff. I have several of those left. But literally, James, I would touch it and it's like, oh, this wants to be Pinky the Dancer, would have been the artist in the Jungian archetype world. And I just thought that turned out so cute. And I just love Pinky. So Pinky was my favorite piece, and I went to great pains to find dead toe shoes, the ballet shoes, to hang under her.
Dead toe shoes? Did you say?
They call them dead toe shoes. I found them at a little dance shop.
They're called dead toe shoes?
Because I guess they can't dance on their toes anymore because they don't work.
But so this is if I want to go buy some ballerina shoes, I ask for dead toe shoes?
No, you don't want dead toe shoes because they're not functional.
Oh, so these are after they're...
Yeah, it's aftermarket.
Expired. This is after the shoe has expired.
Right.
Okay, not the toe.
Right. And so I have those, and I just kind of dangled it from below the piece because she didn't have legs, she didn't have arms, she didn't have a head. It was this kind of ethereal little dancer.
Uh-huh.
And I just love it.
So you like your dancers without any arms or legs?
No,
or
I don't. I just, it was just like a representative of a dancer. Speaking of representative, remember our discussion about... the invisible sculptures.
Oh, do I ever. That okay. Will never leave me, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Well, I was at a very small, like three-person little get-together on the 4th. And one of my friends is an artist, a local artist. She teaches at the colleges. She's very knowledgeable. And I asked her what she thought about it, what she thought about white paintings, and what she thought about the invisible sculpture. I just want to share this with you because I thought it was interesting. She said, in terms of the invisible sculpture, she was familiar with Garot's work. And she said she thought that the invisible sculpture of Buddha did have a place.
I'm giving you a look of dismissiveness.
Because everyone's got their opinion. You know, she made a point, and she's like, because in the construct of Buddha, you know, with nothingness and like kind of a shoe in the body and like just the whole construct of like the philosophy.
Okay.
You know, that she's like, maybe there would be a place for like a nothing of Buddha. She goes, because if someone achieved nirvana or the next phase of enlightenment, that they perhaps would disappear.
That's so not what this artwork is about, though.
All right. I know it's not what it's about. She
If the Buddha incarnated and went up to this guru guy, he would gently walk up to him, gently place his hand on his shoulder and say, do better.
Do better.
And then disappear into nothingness again.
Well, that's what she was saying. She said that anything after, she said the first piece that he did of Buddha, you know, so she had a couple thoughts on that. She was like, first of all, she's like, that may or may not be, you know, she's like, I get it. It's a conceptual piece.
This guy's not a Buddhist, though.
Right. I know. We're just talking Buddha versus nothingness. And then she said, and I'm really probably hacking up her thought process here. I apologize, Dee. But anyway, she said any work after that that would be represented to be invisible was probably redundant because it had already been done. And then she took it a step further and said, in terms of art and representational art, that, you know, from the time of cave paintings to the time of photography to then the time of minimalism. And she talked at length about the bull series that Picasso did in terms of like the realistic. There were like five or six different images of a bull, and where the first one was very realistic and then it turned into like just lines. And she's like, and it kind of like drafts like this whole minimalist. It's like, you know, we all know what a bull looks like. Why do we need to draw a bull?
Precisely. But that's the whole point, is that you see this line of art inquiry and you extend it to its illogical conclusion.
Exactly.
Because representation is about representation. If you want to tell a story, you can create an emotional impact that way, or you can draw or sculpt something. But just telling someone that there's an invisible bowl on the table might be an interesting story, but it's not a sculpture. And it's not.
No, it's not. And I don't think she was making an argument that it was a sculpture. But all she was saying was, in terms of like the minimalist piece of it, that, you know, she was, if we've gone from like, you know, cave paintings to, she's like, there was no reason for realism after photography. And if you really need
that's
to
nonsense.
Know. That's
nonsense.
Okay. Okay. That was her perspective. She's like, you know, if you want to know what something looks like, you can look at it or take a picture. And then it comes to the point, and she's like, so maybe it's come full circle, where then art is representative of nothing. And the conversation kind of just died there. But anyway, I thought it was interesting.
Okay. I'm going to say that that was a completely fatuous argument.
Okay. Maybe art
It's cyclical. It's going nowhere. It starts nowhere and it goes nowhere. Mm-hmm. You can't just have nothing there. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, and just, right. And the sculpture was nothing.
Well, that depends on how you look at it. It's right. All in your mind. So are you saying your mind is nothing?
No, I'm saying that I think the whole concept of a nothing sculpture, I don't really speak art speak. I don't, you know.
I think you could if you wanted to, though.
I could if I wanted to sound pretend. But I looked at that, and I mean, I friggin' laughed at it, James. And I came here and we laughed at it, and we talked about it in like one of the first podcasts. And it wasn't very artistically.
Well, we deconstructed it because it wasn't art. It's a con job.
It's a con job, yeah. But I guess if you want to turn it into art speak.
He is a con artist. You can say that about him. They do say con artist, and there is an art to it.
Oh, wow.
But it's not the kind of art that, you know, people are paying him for.
No. Well, someone paid him $18,000.
Yes, but I'm saying they don't realize that they're paying a con artist. They think they're actually paying an artist.
Right.
That's the deal. Welcome to the modern world.
Anyway, that story went nowhere, and I probably butchered the words. But, you know, it was just, I thought it was an interesting from an artist who's a working artist in town. And so she understood, you know, she knew the whole, like, history of the white paintings.
It's actually, well, obvious. Everyone who's moderately informed of art history would know white paintings. Right. But also the invisible art is not new. It was done at least in the 50s and 60s. And no doubt it goes back beyond that, because any con artist worth his salt, this is one. You know, this is a really low-hanging fruit.
It is. It is. And but I guess I'm not a con artist. I wouldn't have the...
Chutzpah.
That's a good... I was going to say something else, but it was worse than chutzpah.
Well, also you have to be a bit of a sociopath, as I mentioned earlier. You have to be a sociopath to really lie to people so blatantly and openly and have so little regard for them.
Right.
Because if you sell someone $18,000 worth of nothing, you have no regard for them at all. You disrespect them.
It disrespects the craft. It disrespects a lot of it. There's so many layers.
That's the other problem. You're not only disrespecting the person, you're just disrespecting the art world as a whole. The idea that you're making something to try to engender an emotional response, try to make something of value.
Mm-hmm.
And not value monetarily, but value emotionally and intellectually.
Right. So that was just my observation this weekend. I thought it was interesting.
Great. It seems like you missed an opportunity to deconstruct that argument.
I did. Well, we were eating.
I don't think we should really tolerate this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
Because it helps to perpetuate it. And the more it perpetuates it, the more it submerges or pushes down people who are trying to do real work in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that photography has somehow removed the need for realism in painting or sculpture is complete nonsense, because photography is its own abstraction. Anybody who knows the slightest thing about photography knows that photography itself is an abstraction.
It is.
Just by using a different lens and a different point of view, I can make anyone look ugly.
Oh.
Yeah, if you use a wide-angle lens, a wide-angle lens is one that obviously takes a big wide angle of something.
Right.
So you have like a zoom lens, right, which shows you something very far away, very close up. The wide-angle lens is the opposite of that. So, for instance, I just thought of a good example.
Okay, good.
If you're in a football stadium and you want to take a picture of the whole stadium and, like, the people and the players and just get a view of like what the Goodyear blimp would see, mm-hmm. you'd use a wide angle lens because you'd be able to get most of the stands and most of the players, but everybody would be really small. And if you want to take a picture of an actual football player on the field running around, you know, mm-hmm. doing his thing, then you use a zoom lens.
Mm-hmm.
The zoom lens is also good for portraiture because it kind of flattens out the face. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where the science for this came from, but the science tells us that when we think of a person's image, when we recognize people and we store those images of them in our head,
right.
we are thinking of them from a perspective of about 15 feet away. There are some evolutionary biologists that think that's because that's the point at which you would need to recognize a friend or a foe.
50 or 15?
15. 15 feet away. So we want to get a lens that gets us to about that right proportion.
Okay.
And that is generally about 100 mil. Well, let's just say on average, plus or minus, about 100 millimeters, which is mm-hmm. kind of a zooming lens. So that's a really good portrait lens because that's what we're expecting to see.
Right.
It shows the ears, right, on the side of the head, mm-hmm. shows them kind of a little bit flattened out, but it shows all the features. If you take a wide angle lens, you can get right up in their face. You can get like 6 inches from their face and still capture their whole head. But now because the lens is so close, it's almost going to be like taking a picture of a planet. And so everything that's really close to the lens is going to be super overdone. And the further away you get from the nose, the further it's going to recede. So you won't even see the ears because it's almost like it's around the other side of the planet. So you get a really big nose and a really big forehead, whatever is close to the lens, mm-hmm. and it's totally distorted. And that's how you make a really bad picture of a beautiful person.
Oh.
Just shove a wide-angle lens in their face. Was that too much explanation?
No, that was perfect.
Okay. It would be so much easier to show you just the pictures.
Right. I mean, I think that's the downside of a podcast discussing art.
Stupid podcast.
Right. We'll have to morph into something else. But no, I just thought it was interesting. And, you know, that was one person's and I probably butchered her words. And so, again, my apologies.
Well, you know,
and it's like after, you know, a couple drinks and some food and talking about, like, I'm like, whatever. But it was just like this whole representative thing. And it was, you know, a thought process.
Okay. But this is a podcast. You have time to get ready for it. So next time, if you want to use somebody's words, think about it. Write them down. Do better. Maybe ride a bicycle to clear your head.
I did write them down. My notes are at home.
What? Oh.
Damn. By the time I realized I left it on the kitchen table, I was halfway here and it would have been
You're
late.
Giving me a migraine.
I know.
One of my son's teachers, I think it was mm-hmm. a fourth or fifth grade teacher, told my wife that one time.
What?
Because my wife was concerned that our son was, at the time, failing math.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, you talk to me so much, you're just giving me a migraine now.
Oh,
it's like,
no.
I'm sorry that we're interested in our son's education and you're not educating him properly. I'm sorry that gives you a migraine.
Who would say that to a parent? My goodness.
A very crummy, I was going to say crappy, uh-huh. a very because, you know, I don't want to swear on the podcast.
Right.
So I won't say crappy.
Okay. You just did.
Just twice or three times, however many times. A very crummy teacher. She was a bad teacher.
That's just awful. That's an awful thing to say.
It was a terrible thing to say. And a terrible, you know, she's like, no big deal that he's, of course, now, just to put things in perspective.
Yes.
His last semester, he got straight A's.
Oh, good.
Which is pretty amazing, considering he's my son.
You're very bright, James.
He got my wife's brains.
Well, that's good.
Thankfully.
That's good.
Is there anything else you want to mention before we wrap up? You know what? I'm going to say this. We were going to talk about bad artists today, and I'm so glad. My whole plan was to avoid talking about bad artists because I think it's kind of pointless and mean. On the other hand, it's kind of hard not to talk about them, but, you know, I'm just glad we didn't. We got distracted by bicycles and mannequins.
I'm glad we didn't.
Should we do a mannequin riding a bicycle?
We could.
Or better yet, a bicycle riding a mannequin. Do we have the money for a bicycle? I don't think we do.
I don't think. I wish I hadn't, you know. That little bike, $40.
Oh, you're still jonesing after that. Wow. Oh, wait. Are you talking about your original tricycle or the bicycle?
No, the green one that my ex, like, just dropped. He's, I think this is your bike. And it was just this Schwinn with flat tires. Like, it's not my bike. And so it was in my yard. So I told a friend of mine, he's like, well, I collect bikes. I'll come and get it. And then his eyes got real big and he was super excited. And
you just let it go?
Yeah.
That's funny, considering the things you don't let go.
I know. Well, I hadn't. It just. I guess I didn't attach a value.
You don't have room in your life for a bicycle.
Well, now I want it.
That's distressing.
Now I want one.
Well, now you want one. Now you don't have it.
We could do. I have a leg of a mannequin. We could do something with a leg and a bike.
Every time I talk to you about mannequins, I get really creeped out.
I know.
I think you need to leave now. You're looking at me now like I'm a mannequin. Do you understand where mannequins end and humans begin?
I do.
Don't look at me like that.
It's not like.
God, she's eyeing me up. I can tell you how big I am. Do you need to know? I'm 5'11", okay?
No, it's like we were.
It's too big for a mannequin.
I wanted to do something with the mannequins, and now I lost all my mojo during 2020.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know.
I know what that's like.
I did find the leg. There are a couple arms. There's several heads. I think I have 2 full body mannequins and multiple torsos that are legit torsos, like 3D. Like they have a back. It's not just the forms like I got from Easley's Fun Shop.
I am so creeped out right now. I'm going to say goodbye, Catherine.
Okay.
Because I can't take it anymore.
Okay.
You were a nurse too, which makes it even a little bit creepier.
Well, I was a nurse. I think that maybe that was my interest in the human body. I used to like to paint nudes, and I think a lot of that.
Okay.
You know, so anyway. But no, I mean, and I don't see them as a sexualized anything.
I wasn't thinking that. I don't know if that's better or worse.
I see them as a canvas, like a 3-dimensional canvas.
No, that's not creepy.
That's not creepy at all.
No.
I don't think so. But anyway, bye, James.
Thank you, Catherine. Bye-bye.